really want something in this life, have to work for it. Now, quiet, they're about to announce the lottery numbers.
Coaches, welcome back to the Talking Split podcast. The Homer Simpson drops getting longer and longer every week. At some stage, we may even just play it an entire Simpsons episode.
But we're getting into the good seasons.
We are. Yeah. No, we absolutely are. That little golden era. I saw a chart not too long ago. We've had like every season of The Simpsons and the rankings that it would have, and you know, the golden era of like season 5 through to about season 12. And it's like, yeah, the rankings are high on that one. As you can obviously hear, Nick Mihai, Zoe Carr, welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
It's great to have everyone back in. As we mention every week, you can follow along on the Talking Split socials on X and Instagram. The drills are back, so that went up on Monday night. Podcasts are back for this block as well. If there are any topics that you would like us to talk about, if there are any types of drills that you would like us to delve into, by all means, let us know. You can slide into the Talking Split DMs. You can send me an email at Basketball Victoria if you want to, or you can comment on the post and we'll grab everything from there. So if there is anything you're after that would help you with your coaching, let us know. Similarly, if you are able to like, share, follow, subscribe, all the fun stuff that we do with podcasts, obviously on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify, that would obviously help us grow the podcast and get to as many coaches as we possibly can as well. Straight off the bat this week, we're into...
You know you make me wanna shout out my coaches, shout out my coaches, out my coaches, come on.
Haven't done that in a while.
This is where we do need video on the podcast, unfortunately, as Zoe rolls her eyes heavily as Mihai, you know, cutting shapes over on the other side of the room. The coach shed hat this week is actually for Nick Mihai. Nick has spent a little bit of time out of Victoria over the last couple of weekends, made the very bold decision over the last weekend to miss his wife's birthday and first Mother's Day and head on up to the Northern Territory to take some coaching courses, Nick.
That list you read us of things to not say when your wife's in labour?
Yeah.
Are you going to start one of things to not do just in general life?
Well, first of all, I've got to say that I just have this strong feeling that Sarah has spread this information because I'm getting a lot of emails. It's on the podcast. I feel like I'm getting cornered here, but like, yeah. So basically...
Not your best decision, mate.
It wasn't. Yeah, it's definitely... That father of the year and the husband of the year is still not going well for me.
And the roadshow's not worth it.
It's not worth it.
So take us through your last couple of weeks, Nick. It's obviously Basketball Australia have been helping out the Northern Territory in particular, and you've gone up the last couple of weeks and delivered coaching courses both in Darwin and Alice Springs.
Yeah, so a couple of weeks ago I was up in Darwin for a few days and I delivered two community courses and a club course. And last weekend I was in Alice Springs doing the same thing. So it was really good to see how different it is coaching-wise in compared to Victoria. First of all, I've never seen so many coaches coach in thongs or sandals.
Yeah.
I actually made a point of it where I said, do you all just coach like this? And one of the coaches turns to me and he goes, you're not from here, are you, mate? It's like, no, I'm not. Yeah. But really great little community of coaches. They all have very similar beliefs. They want to give back. They want to help the community by using basketball as a vessel as well. And just a great opportunity for me personally to do something so different and obviously something I'm very passionate about. Some great people there doing some really hard work, like Dan East. I worked with him over the last couple of weeks as well. They have a very difficult task. So Northern Territory, he manages both Darwin and Alice Springs. And he can only get to Alice Springs probably once or twice a year, right? But there's some very talented kids down there. So it was funny, after I delivered the last club course, he was standing at the door because he was obviously going, he's not going to come back for a while. And he heard all the coaches throughout the day and he goes, all right, you and you, I need to speak to you, because he needs to get them together to start teaching the kids. And just the issues that they face, quite difficult. So when I'm complaining about going to Bendigo, I will not in front of Dan.
But I love how you're not going to just stop doing that and keep it in perspective. No. You're just not going to do it in front of Dan.
Yeah, exactly, because he has a pretty good defense.
But it is one of those things that we probably dismiss a little bit at times, is just the logistical issues of a lot of other states. Like, we are very lucky in Victoria, obviously. From a proximity perspective, most things are fairly accessible for our coaches and our players and our parents to get to. Yes, you might have to do a couple of hours driving, those sorts of things. That's fine. But by the same token, it's it's a lot less compared to everywhere else, and even the ability for someone from interstate to come up and deliver courses in the territory, that's not something that they get access to a lot. So it does give a great perspective, I suppose, on some things. What were some of the questions you got asked the most up there by the coaches?
The zoning in under 12s is a big one. Yep. So junior coaches are like, why can't we zone in under 12s? So explaining that to them, and probably mostly how do we develop players when we don't have many games is probably the biggest one. Which was a difficult one for me to answer because I'm obviously in an environment where that's not an issue, or it's a different problem here. But like, it's that's not the issue for us. Yep. Probably a lot of questions on long term and short term goals. So when I spoke to them about how do you create long term and short term goals, one of the coaches suggested that he broke it into blocks. So every time he played a team once, that would be his review time. And I said to him, no, not long term, short term. And he goes, well, there's five teams. Yep. There's five teams that we play. So there were a lot of questions around that. How do we develop if we're just playing the same five teams? Which was like, it was a very difficult question. I'll probably put it to you. Like, what would you suggest in that instance?
So just five teams in the age group?
Five teams in the age group, yep.
I'd play everybody in a round and then maybe look to combine a couple of age groups and sort of expand out for both age groups. Mm. So then some of the younger players are getting to play with and against some older kids, and then the older kids are learning some leadership type skills with the younger kids. Play a round of that and then go back to your original age groups for them, like finals or whatever you do there.
The other one is 3-on-3.
Yeah.
Ability to break it up a little bit, and you obviously don't need as many players for 3-on-3 where you can do a little bit of
stuff. That could extend out your season too. So you could come back to 3x3 and then go back to your age group, original age groups. And so now your season's going for more than just 10 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. And that will obviously, some kids will prefer 5-on-5 over 3-on-3 and vice versa, of course. So you might be able to engage some kids that aren't playing the sport to come in and then use 3-on-3 as a little bit of a tester. Hey, do you like this? Are you interested in it? And you might be able to pick them up for 5-on-5 after that. But yeah, it's complex.
It's complex. Some of the difficulties I faced as well were things that were relevant here, but I don't know how relevant it was in Northern Territory. For example, when I'm telling them about the importance of activating your body, in Darwin, they really just need to step outside and then step back inside and they're good to go, right?
Yeah, they're warm.
Yeah, they're warm straight away.
Exactly. No, different world completely, but great that you were able to get up there and do it. And obviously, as you said, it's a good experience for you as well. It's, see what else goes on out there in basketball worlds, I guess.
What I think's great about it too, Nick, is that, we promote in basketball, and I'm sure in all sports, but in basketball, in the coaching fraternity about sharing and, not keeping information to yourself or trying to hold on to things like that. So going into another state and sharing that knowledge, I think, is fantastic.
Yeah, it was a great opportunity. I even said to the coaches at the end of it, if you have a question, just email me. I don't care. Yep. I'll get an answer for you. That's fine. We're all coaches.
Yep. So absolutely. No, it's a great thing. So congratulations to you on doing that. But you have tapped into what our topic for today is, what does development look like? And, this could comfortably go for 3 to 4 hours by the time we talk through everything. But it's interesting that coaches in the Northern Territory are asking the same questions that a lot of coaches in Victoria are asking at the same time, is what is development in particular? I'll leave it at that to start off with. Zoe, for you, what is development? What does it look like?
Oh, wow. So there's a few, I suppose, levels when we're talking development, particularly development of athletes. I think the first thing that needs to be understood by both coaches or the whole group, coaches, athletes and parents, is that development is not linear. So one kid is going to develop and it looks like they shoot from 0 to 10 really quickly. Another kid might look like they just get to sort of 5 if you're talking on a scale. And they're doing the same things and the same amount of work, but one's getting ahead quicker than the other. But then all of a sudden the other one takes over, and it's the old popcorn analogy. Like, popcorn is in the microwave in the same environment. All the kernels are the same, but they pop at different times. And it's a similar thing with kids and their development. I think one of the things that's the hardest for coaches is remaining on a development mindset, because we do play in games, and keeping what is right, especially young, what is correct for development, doesn't always win you games. So that becomes a really important piece from a coaching perspective, is to hold on to that development mindset, which we can dive into a little bit more throughout the pod. But for me, it's what is going to allow this athlete to either, so if we're talking juniors, to either make a higher team the next year or be more impactful the next year. And the most important part is that they come back as well. So there's a million different sort of facets to it. Like, I could probably keep going, but yeah, for mine, they're the really important points when it comes to developing young athletes.
Yep. What about you, Nick?
Yeah, so before I start, you were talking about developing doesn't necessarily win you games. I actually think if you focus on winning, it'll win you less games than focus on developing, first of all. For me, I guess, for lack of a better term, if there's a framework for it, it would be skill plus decision equals development, right? Like, so you learn the skill to create the comfort in it, and then you start working on the decision-making process, which is our gameplay style. Yep.
So would you have skill before decision, or decision before skill in that space?
I would have a little bit of decision, but yep, mostly skill to begin with, because if you can't execute a left-handed pass,
doesn't you may make you know it, when.
Yeah, you don't know if they're making the right decision. You can't help them anymore because they may want to throw with the left, but they can't.
So. See, I actually go the other way and let the decision teach the skill. So show that, okay, your lack of skill, like if you use a left-hand pass is a brilliant example.
Because we never see it,
Just listen to the most obvious one, right?
But
and free throws.
Showing that skill deficiency within the decision is what is, you know, the lack of skill should never dictate the decision. So for mine, the decision comes first, and then allow that to teach you the skill, or at least go and work on the skill. And I think that's somewhere where we get caught as coaches. I know I definitely did this early. If there was something that they need to be sort of penalized on or whatever, it was like running or, you know, something like so stupid. When I say so stupid, I was so stupid. Where now it's like the penalty is the skill. So, okay, the decision was that you needed to make a left-hand pass. You couldn't execute that. So out to the side, 10 left-hand passes, now back in the drill. You know, that sort of thing to try and change also what a penalty is as well, and not have it just be running up and down, because we know our kids don't need that.
I don't think there's necessarily a right or wrong, because I think every kid will want something a little bit different. It's whilst we're using analogies, it's like the same boiling water that, you know, hardens an egg, softens something else.
Pasta.
You know, pasta, that's the one. There could be a whole section on this podcast about Rob getting 80% of the things right, and then the last 20% you've got to try and figure out for yourself.
I thought we were swinging to food then. Yeah. I was,
hey, now I'm engaged. Here we go.
Lock in. But that is.
Barbecue?
Yeah. That is one area, though, that every kid will want something different. And this is, like, for mine, development is frustrating, but it is not the same for everyone. And that's the hardest thing, I think, to get through to people, is that we all, I think everyone has an end goal in mind, but knowing that end goal will not be the same for everyone for a start, but even their journey to get to whatever their end goal is will be different. And the biggest thing, and you hit on it before, Zoe, is ultimately if the kids aren't coming back, well, they'll never recognize their end goal anyway. So for mine, skill development, as much as the first one that comes to mind is frustrating, is also fun. Like that's the enjoyable part, I think, for mine of and as coaches, we all love the tactical game and you know, the chess game within the game and those sorts of things. But for mine, the actual joy in coaching actually comes from getting people better. And that's where the actual, hey, I've seen that kid that has been working on this for 3 weeks and hasn't been able to do it. And now all of a sudden the penny's dropped and they've managed to do it. And it's like, wow, this is like a real light bulb moment. You see the joy in the kid's face. And it's like, this is a big moment for them because now they know that I haven't just been trying to get them to do something for no reason for 3 weeks. It's we've been trying to do something. They've been able to rip it out in a training session and now it transfers into a game. Brilliant. That's where the fun stuff is. So for mine, it and look, there are days where it is two steps forward, one step back, I think, with coaching that, you know, in particular, like the one that springs to mind straight away is shot technique. So many times we try and adjust someone's shot for whatever reason. The load point might be different. Their guide hand might be too far on the front of the ball or things like that. It can look perfect for 2 or 3 weeks and all of a sudden you have just a random day when it goes back and it's like, no, why's this happened again?
Or they have school holidays 2 weeks and they haven't touched the basketball. You're starting from scratch as well.
Or they've grown.
Yeah.
As well. Growth makes such a difference in skill development because they've, at times, and depending on how much they've grown, they're almost learning to run again. Yep. Like it's, you know, these are all the things not only convincing the athletes that it's important because sometimes skill development can also be a bit boring. Yep. But convincing them of that and how important that is, plus all these other barriers that you're up against, you're exactly right, Rob. It's frustrating at times.
You're almost asking your kids to eat their vegetables. And if we know anything, they don't want vegetables. You know, they want the takeaway food because that's the one that makes them feel good instantaneously. And when we look at skill development, it's not instantaneous adjustments. Like how many times do you adjust someone's shot when they're standing at the free throw line, they shoot the next one and it's about 4 foot short and they look at you like, what the hell? Like it's, you've made my shot worse. And it's like, no, it's one shot. It's one adjustment. You're on training almost 7 to 8 years potentially of shooting the ball one way to something different. Of course it's going to feel different and the outcome is not going to be the same. And that's a difficult part of it because ultimately there is so much danger of promoting winning at the youth levels rather than developing and skill development in particular. And if we were to look at like that Fab Five pass, dribble, shoot, defend, move as a base point that we were sort of starting at from like skill development. If you were to survey coaches and say which one matters more to you or which one do you think is the most important, you'll get 5 different answers. Everyone will think something different. And I bounce on this continually because I sit there and say, hey, shooting matters the most. We have to be able to shoot the ball. It's like, yeah, but if you can't defend, we can't play you. Like we struggle to find opportunities if you're just going to be a sieve down the other end. But then I sort of go to, but if they can't move, it doesn't matter if they can shoot it because they won't be able to defend, but they won't be able to move to a position where they can get the shot in the first place. So, and this is the constant challenge we have in our head. So when we walk into stadiums, maybe looking a little bit angry or upset or confused at times as coaches, parents, it's not because we are angry, upset or confused. We are trying to weigh up what do we need at this point in time to help our players develop.
But also what you're also up against is, you know, my shot technique will be different to both of you.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And that's similar in our athletes. So we've also got to keep in mind that our athletes may have up to 4 or 5 coaches at any one time.
Of varying levels. So some of them might just be volunteer coaches that are there because nobody else would do it, and others might be well-credentialed, have coached for eternity coaches.
And the hardest sell that I've found out of those skills for shooting is selling to an 11 or 12-year-old kid that this will help you. Mm. At 17 years old and 18 years old. That's a really hard sell because they're like, well.
So how have you gone about it?
So I've definitely justified about when you get stronger, when you get more strength in your body, this is really going to help you. It's going to be more consistent. At the moment, let's just focus on your follow through because what we're going to build is muscle memory. Okay. And I know there's arguments about that's not a real thing. I know that stuff as well, but it seems to be a term that kids understand. And we get reps through it. And if they can't hit the ring, you go against the wall.
Yep.
Okay, so you put a mark on the wall and the ball goes up in your form shooting, goes down. Or you can do your line shooting just to get those reps in. When it's gameplay, I'm not coaching shooting, as in correcting their form.
Yep.
Because
they are what they are.
Going back to what Zoe said, well, just if they make the right decision, that's part of that development, so I'm good.
Well, and it's, the hard part too is part of this, and we may have spoken about this before, I can't really remember, but the delayed gratification. And that is a big part of what coaching is hey, you're going to have to do some stuff now that is going to be uncomfortable, but it is going to help you in the long run with this. And I love these videos because every now and again, there's a university or someone that gets some money to do a study on something. And it's like, oh, you know what? Let's look into the mind of a child as to how they view things. And there's a video going around, and I can't think what it is. If I find it, I'll link it into the show notes, where they'll walk into a room, they'll put a child in front of a camera, and they'll put like a chocolate on the plate in front of them. And they're like, hey, I've just got to go out of the room for 2 minutes. Don't eat the chocolate. And if you don't eat the chocolate, you'll get 2 chocolates later. And you can see the mental anguish on the child's head as they're going through, I really want to eat the chocolate. It's right there now. And I get gratification out of it.
That.
Oh, I understand it completely too. Like there is
not being chocolate. I was too. Say, yeah.
I'm pretty sure Rob's done that to me.
Was that part of your interview process? Yeah.
There has not been a chocolate that has lasted in our household more than 15 minutes. I can promise you that. But it is one of those areas where you can see the mental strength required for them to sit there and it's like, actually, I know that if I don't eat it now, I'm going to get 2 later and it's going to be better in the long run because I'm going to get more of a reward. Kids don't view that.
Mm.
Like they view instantaneous gratification. And it is one of those areas where they've done studies to this where the children that can almost rationalize why they need to leave it alone are infinitely more successful later on in life because they have that mental fortitude to be able to say, actually, what is right now doesn't help what is right later.
But that's also I'd question that a little bit. Is it that
the
they're rational?
Says it's accurate, so
no, but is it
boot
that
it up, Google it?
Is it that they're rationalising it, or are they kids that follow the rules?
Quite possible. Yeah,
because it
absolutely.
Might just be
yeah,
that
so many different
you know, oh, the adults told me not to eat that, so I'm not going to eat it.
Yep. Absolutely.
You know, so and getting inside that, and that's again, this is what we're talking about. Every kid, every athlete is different. Every person is different, and are going to absorb information different ways, require messaging in different ways. And so, yeah, it's tough.
A big caveat in development as well. Kids got to want to do it.
Yeah.
Like that's
the
biggest
kid.
Issue.
Motivation.
You can,
yeah,
sending a kid to do 5 sessions a week with skills trainers and they kind of like basketball, but, you know, they don't see themselves as being a pro player or anything like that. That's difficult. It's difficult to get them better at a skill set that they're not 100% interested in or focused on.
So a question for both of you, and I don't necessarily have an answer for this, so we'll see where it ends up. How do you develop motivation in athletes?
I'll go first. I mean, depends what age. I guess enjoyment would be the best way I would describe it, making them feel like they want to come to training, want to come to the games. You know, if they want to do development stuff, it's enjoyable for them. Building a bit of a rapport as a result of that as well. There are ways I do it. So it feels like they're gaining things outside of basketball to make them feel like they want to be there, basically. That's how I would approach it.
Yep.
Yeah, community and connection, particularly for girls that I'm working with. So it's, you know, we see on the in our Saturday sessions, it's, they're more happy just to see each other.
Yep.
And then I can work with that because it then means that they're turning up. So, yeah, that connection and creating a community outside of their normal, you know, sort of school and home life I think is important. But then it's also kids, I mean all people, but kids want to hear that they're doing something well. So when they do, we've got to be on top of that and make sure it's not missed. And it doesn't have to be, you know, this big song and dance or anything like that, but just walking past and go, yeah, don't mind that. And you see them and this big smile comes on their face and so they want to do it again. So making sure we don't miss moments, I think, is really important.
Yeah. Dr. Julia Walsh has delivered 2 seminars on motivation in particular. So initially the Southern Cross coaches from country did it at the start of the year here, but also just delivered it a workshop with our accelerated women's coaching program a few weeks ago now, which was a really fascinating insight into what motivates athletes in particular. If anyone is looking to do that, please do reach out because I'm happy to connect you with Julia in particular. It was a very worthwhile exercise which shone a really different lens on what really matters for kids in particular, because, and again, I'll keep coming back to this. Like, we can't be dragging kids out of their houses, kicking and screaming to come and do work or to just play a game that they supposedly love. Do they love it or don't? And that's fine if they don't. Like, there's no problem with that. Because I am a big believer in don't early specialise with athletes and kids. Take them to every sport. Like, figure out what they really like and lean into that. We don't need to, oh, I think you're going to be the... And, well, no. Like, if they don't love it, well, it doesn't really matter in that sort of space. So find out what they love. And if that's not basketball, well, so be it. Disappointing. I can't believe anyone would not love basketball. But, you know, that's their own call. Yeah. Like, it's...
Well, you listen to the... If anybody's... And a lot of coaches through the state will have listened to Mike McHugh's presentation on talent ID. And he's like, you need to have, to succeed, you need to have three things. You need to have genetics. You need to have skills and skill set. And you need to have the drive. And the one you cannot compromise on is the drive. Because the drive can sort of make up for some genetic, you know, if you're a little bit shorter or, you know, whatever it is, you know, it can be something that can push you a little bit further because you've got that drive. It's like you cannot compromise on the drive.
Yep. And that's the thing. Do we need to develop that as coaches, or is that just, hey, you either have it or you don't and it can't be taught? Now, for mine, I think it can be developed because I think that is a big part of the developmental package. But that is, put them in a situation where they're going to experience some success. They're going to enjoy that feeling of what success feels like. And it's like, actually, do I really like this? And that might be, success will be different for everyone. That might be they can now shoot a free throw at you know, 90%. That might be I'm isolated from my friend group at school, but I really like my friend group at sport. That's success because now they've built a relationship that they can lean into. And like I joke about it all the time. I see nobody from high school anymore. Like it's we all go through it. But the people I hang out with and talk to are people I've met through sport. So they're the ones that I've found the most commonalities with. And I was talking to, it might have even been Nick, we were talking about the other day that, you know, it's mainly at that uni age where a lot of people start to really decide actually who am I, what do I want to be, who are the people that align closely with my beliefs. And success for a lot of young kids in particular is finding that group. So maybe it's not all on court. Maybe it is finding that sense of belonging off court and finding people that you closely relate to. And it's like, actually, I really like that person and they really like basketball. And I want to spend more time with that person. So I really like basketball too. And I want to try and motivate myself to drive them further and try and be better with that person. And it's actually one of the people... I won't name the player because they're still a junior athlete within the program, but there are so many kids that we have within our programs where it's like, look, I don't think they're going to get to where they want to get to. And, you know, we're forecasting a lot of stuff and every bit of information on talent identification would suggest that the later you have to make a decision on someone, the more accurate you're going to be with that decision. You can't forecast at 9 years old who's going to be great and who's not.
Well, they tried to do that, didn't they, for the 2000 Olympics. And he said, you can't do it. You cannot class an 11 or 12-year-old as a high performance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But there are kids within the program that we would suggest, look, we don't think they will get there. We'll give them a chance, obviously. If they can, great. But they will make those around them better. And that is a big part of what it is. Can you surround yourself with the right people that will also help you develop? And it's, you know, the whole thing, if you're the smartest person in the room, find a different room. Like, it's that sort of stuff, but it goes with our players as well. If you're the best player in that gym, find a new gym. Like it, but you also have an element of you owe it to the next players coming through to occasionally be the best player in that gym and drag them with you. Like, I think that's a big part of it, but that also takes away from the winning lens at times, as we've spoken about, that the development doesn't always equal winning because it is that two steps forward, one step back. But how many times have we been in games where it's like, look, I really should make this sub now to get this player in because they've sat for a bit, but I'd like to win this game, and so I'm not going to make that sub. And that player doesn't get to play, and then you have the, not necessarily the fallout, but you have that mental battle in your head of, I've probably gone away from what I think I'm about here and what I think I'm supposed to be about for the players, which is I've got to play them. And you never know. Like, it's so many times, like, it's...
But do they need to... I guess this depends on age group, but do they need to understand that some players just will play more than others?
I think that's healthy, yeah.
That was going to be my next point. I think that is healthy. Everything we've spoken about so far is mostly an on-court skill development type lens. For me, the most important... I've said it a million times, I'll always work so hard to make better basketball players. But my major drive is to make successful humans so they can go into the world, because the world – basketball is quite a fair environment at the moment. You know, like we've got these things where everybody's expected to play and everybody's expected to be given the same amount as a, you know, regardless of skill set and all this sort of stuff. The real world's not like that. The real world's not fair. You know, you might be the most qualified for a job, but you don't get it. And, you know, all those sort of things. You have to work with people in an office environment or on a site or something like that you might not like, but you've got to learn how to work with them. And these are all these sort of skills, you know, leadership, teamwork, resilience, you know, just being a good person is what, for me, they're the parts when I watch the athletes I've worked with move on and I hear about these incredible things that they do, that's actually what really makes me proud, is that they've got the ability to do that. I think I spoke about it in a pod earlier or late last year. I had an athlete who withdrew from SDP because she's made the decision she wants to focus on her schooling. She wants to really drive for a job that is incredibly technical, requires a lot of education, and is difficult. A really, you know, sort of small percentage of people type job. But when she sent the email, she was so grateful to the program for all the things that it's taught her that she's going to be able to take into that space. And I am confident that one day I'm going to, you know, turn on the TV or something like that and see her doing something unbelievably brilliant in that field because of the lessons she's been able to learn within, you know, within the program, within sport, within basketball, not just our program. So the off-court stuff for me that you are taught in terms of development through basketball in particular, I'm sure other sports, but I can only speak for basketball, that's real development. That's developing people. And I think that is that we are very lucky to be able to have that sort of impact as coaches on young people.
Yeah, I think with development, we always focus with basketball. We focus on the skill, right? But it's the life skills that you're talking about here, the off-court stuff. I've got an example. There was a player. I won't mention who the player is, but basically when he was going through his juniors, he was a five-man and he transitioned himself to a two-man, okay, which would have taken a lot of resilience and understanding and it would have been very frustrating for him. And then he signed with Eastern Washington. So he went over there. And he turned out to be quite a very good player. And when he went over there, he thought the same thing. And he went there and he goes, all right, where do I get my driving points and things like that? And the coach turns to him and he goes, leave it to the athletes. You stand there and shoot when they throw it to you. So that life skill that he learned through the juniors applied to his college. So it absolutely is important that you don't just teach the skill. You've got to help grow the human as well.
Yeah. And like for those of the coaches listening that get to work with girls and young women, like I know it can be testing at times, obviously I do it too, but my goodness, are you lucky. And I think about it often. You can edit this part out if you like, Rob, but I think about it.
Seems like more work. It's probably just going to stay in.
These are the ones I wait for. Here we go.
No, I think about it often because it's, you know, one of the things I'm really big on teaching these young girls is that their voice matters. Their voice is important. To give them the confidence to speak and to be heard. And that's really cool. It's really cool to think. And not to get too deep, but when you talk about, you know, sort of violence-based crime and things that happen against women and girls, to know that there may be a chance that we are getting to teach these girls that if something like that is happening to them, they can step up and say, no, not happening. They've got a support network they could go to for help if they need it. Like, it's a blessing. it's an absolute gift to be able to be able to do that. And I know that's a bit deep, and it's going beyond. And if you're a you know, you might think, oh, I'm just a domestic coach. You have an impact. You have an impact in that. And
I can still name every one of my domestic coaches.
Yeah.
I remember them. Names, good, bad, and in between. Every single one of them. Do not underestimate the impact you have as a coach on these kids, because there is that power dynamic, obviously, that does exist, where you get to control their court time. You get to control which shots they get, those sorts of things. But so many kids come into sessions wanting to please, because they put you on that pedestal as a coach, and all it takes is a word in the wrong direction, or, you know, not showing confidence in them or something like that. And that can bring the whole world crashing down as well. Yeah. So we've got to also, whilst it's nice to be respected as a coach, we've also got to make sure that they respect themselves and they don't put all that weight on the coach's opinion, because that might eventually be a boss.
Yeah.
That might be eventually they write a research paper and someone comes in from the side, this is all incorrect. All right, cool. Well, that's your opinion on it. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. We've got to get them ready for that. And that's part of the development, which I think you're talking about here. Which is, it's not all sunshine and roses.
Well, and teaching them too that sometimes what is the wrong answer is actually the right answer. And what I mean by that is, you know, you might set up a drill and it's this perfect drill and you love it and it's the best. But defense cheats in a way, but that's not what they're supposed to do. If your offensive athlete doesn't make the decision to have what I say to the athlete, basketball overrides, you know, so, yeah, okay, this is what we're doing. You're supposed to come off this on-ball screen, for example. Defense jumps high side and gives you baseline, you take it. Because that, whilst that's not what the drill's supposed to be, so technically the wrong answer, that's the right decision. That's what we're trying to teach here. And if that was a basketball game, I would expect you to take that lane to the basket. So, you know, having the confidence that, okay, I can make this decision, I might make an error. They're not going to, you know, berate me or anything like that. We're going to talk our way through it if it doesn't work, or get the response of, hey, right decision. Even if they make an error at the end of it or fluff the layup or whatever, hey, right decision, poor execution on the shot.
I got a really cool example of that.
Story time.
I'm back, baby. I was doing a passing warm-up drill. I'll try and explain it. But basically, you're in a circle. There's multiple basketballs. You can't pass to the same person. And then as I was going to do the demo for the other teams, I could see them all whispering to each other. And I go, all right, give us a demo. And they all started just shoveling the pass next to each other. And it went round in a circle. And I went to get angry. And I go, I've created a scenario. They're actually doing what I've asked them to do all season. And that's just... Yep. Think it through and find the easiest option.
Cheat it.
Yeah. And then I was like, okay, that's really annoying. That's not how I want you to do it. But that is so clever that you worked together and you huddled. I go, all right. So I did a couple of burpees, which is big for me. Right? Like that's a big deal. I don't normally do them. And it took half the session for me to do them. But anyway, but it was just a really cool moment of developing, like, hey, I'm going to critically think this through, and I reckon we've got a workaround
here.
That's
what you want, though.
Yeah.
Like, you do want players to be able to problem solve. And, you know, we say it all the time. You don't always have a timeout to solve every problem. Mm-hmm. And you don't always have a sub to solve every problem. So players will have to work some stuff out in the end. And, you know, there's been players over the years where it's like, look, I don't like how you got there, but I like that you got to the right outcome in particular. It's like, not how I would have done it, but, you know. And we talk about it a lot. Like, we'll joke around, in particular with the country kids, because they sort of get it more. And it's like, hey, where do you live? And they're like, Bendigo. And it's like, all right. Well, if you're Bendigo where you are and the basket is Traralgon, you don't go via Warrnambool to get there. Like, more straight line. And you give them, like, real-world examples of, like, oh, this is what you're talking about. Because the art of painting a picture for a kid really makes a massive difference for their development. Once they understand what you want and why you want it that way, they're so much more adept at being engaged with what you're doing. And there are times, and look, we've all done it. Like that example you just gave then, Nick, like, I screw up multiple drills on the weekly where I walk in and it's like, hey, I need you in the corner. And it's like, actually, no, I don't. Like, I need you on the foul line extended. It's like, hey, actually, my bad. Out of the corner, jump on the foul line extended. And they're always like, oh, whatever. They don't really think anything of it. But when you sit there and you demand excellence and perfection and you can't be one centimeter out of the wrong spot or otherwise that is completely wrong and I'm going to yell it, well, what do you expect is going to happen? They'll give you the same leniency that you give them.
Yeah.
And own your mistakes as a coach, and that will help your players develop in that space because they'll see, hey, they're just human. I don't make all my shots. Like, they don't get all their things right. There are times where I'll dribble it off my foot and that's not right. We get it, okay? But I think that's a big part of what we do as coaches is the review process afterwards. It's like, well, okay, how do I not make that mistake again next time when I jump in? Do I need better detailed notes on my session plan? Has it been the first time I've run that exercise in like 8 weeks? Do I need to do it more regularly so that I get reps at the right time? Have I rehearsed this beforehand so that I know what it's going to be? Like, I remember, again, being a young naive being a young naive coach for the first time, you go into state trials and everyone looks like they're the greatest player in the history of basketball and you were just lucky to be there. And in a lot of cases, that can be actually accurate. But I remember the first time I was actually given a drill to run and it was the most basic little four-corner passing drill. But you best believe I rehearsed the heck out of that thing before I got there. And it's like, okay, I need to visualize this, what it's going to be. And I've run that drill hundreds of times prior to that point. But because it was like the first time, it really mattered. Like, I went through everything. I was stressing and sweating on this thing. It's like, what the hell am I worried about? I've done this so many times. But that's what it is. Like, you go into that sort of space where, and I think familiarity helps with their players too. They don't want to see something in a game they've never seen somewhere else. And that's what our training sessions are for. Can you create an environment at your training sessions where they are physically tested and mentally tested so that when that environment is recreated in a game situation where you can't stop and start everything and manipulate the constraints around them, that they can figure it out? And I think that's the real test in that development space in particular. It's not always going to be perfect, but can you give them some tools so that they can be in a position to be able to execute? I know we've gone back to the on-court stuff when we've been talking about off-court stuff, but that is a little bit of an insight into the mind of a player. They don't want to get things wrong. How many times when you go to demo something at a training session, it's like, okay, can I have three people up? And they all look at each other and they just sort of slowly walk backwards and all of a sudden they're at the end of the line.
Or it's always the same three.
Yeah.
Always. You know who they
continually.
Are.
Yeah. And it's the same when we're looking for coaches. Hey, parents, we need someone to coach this team. Seven of the parents have run for the hills and the one person's still standing there.
Well, wait, you're the coach. Car park, yeah. Right? Like,
exactly right. That happens all
Let
the time.
Let me know when they've picked a coach.
Yeah.
But and team manager. I don't want to do that either.
Yeah, and don't put me on the scoring roster. Yeah. But that's what our kids go through. They don't want to get things wrong. They want to see it a little bit first so that they can understand it. They know what they're going to go through. They don't want to be the first one up.
So is there any space then for 2v0, for example, like that sort of skill development?
I actually think there is every now and again. Because if nothing else, and this gets me back to the Fab Five of pass, dribble, shoot, defend move. If nothing else, 2VO can show you the movement pattern required to get to that point. So if we're thinking like, put your mind in the old like dribble drive mentality where you've got a driver in the lane line that's going to go downhill. You've got a player in the strong side corner that's going to lift up. Drive, pitch, fill through and go opposite. If nothing else, it'll help teach them the timing of when it happens. Now, for mine, I would usually throw a defender in there somewhere. And that, to be fair, that would normally be me as the coach because that way I can be the defender in there. I can manipulate, do I jump out and force them to back cut? Do I stay where they are and force them to sort of brush off that? So, yes, I would probably throw a defender in there more often than not, but it doesn't mean that 2VO is wrong or incorrect or you can't do it. There is still a time for it. There are still plenty of professional teams that go 5-on-0 trips.
Well, I think it depends on the age group too, though. You know, I think you're really young, like you're sort of under eights and things like that.
I'd just
you
be happy if they're on the court.
Well, and let them do a cartwheel. Yeah, it'll be fine. Happen. If you let them do it, they'll
be... But it creates comfort, doesn't it?
But it does, and it can help with... With that skill set, but for mine, it'd just be a case of, you know, a couple of reps on O. Now here comes and slowly build up the D. Yep. You know, so it might be.
When I say I'm defending, it's slow. I promise you that. Like there is nothing quick about me jumping in a lane.
It might be.
It's like a witch's hat, right?
Yeah, exactly right. Even that
octopus.
Might move more.
Like, if you're like me, you wave your arms. Those feet aren't moving anywhere though.
Nothing going on.
But it might be 3v1. Then 3v2, then 3v3, and you just sort of build it up. And if, especially if you're a new coach, or a parent coach that's just sort of being thrown in, that can take up a big chunk of your session as well. So you'd be pretty happy with that. But
and it probably should.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think having a rehearsal sort of early in those younger age groups, as you get up to sort of 16s and 18s, I probably think that they need to be able to see this in gameplay more so, especially if we're talking sort of higher levels. But one thing I think is really important to develop, and you touched on it a little bit earlier, Nick, was that communication piece. I've stopped telling athletes what the rotation of the drill is.
Mm-hmm.
And when they say, what's the rotation? The answer is figure it out.
Yep.
So they can communicate it and figure it out. Mostly, not because I'm like, I know what the rotation should be, and if it goes on for too long, I tend to.
I'll be honest, there have been times where I haven't worked that out, and it's like, hey, figure it out yourselves. I'll watch them do it, and it's like, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
That was better than my idea.
Yeah. Stealing that.
But it's who can communicate that? Yeah. Who can take the lead on it? And who can see it and figure out where it should go? All those sort of things, I think, is really big in development, especially when we're talking about communication being something that sort of lacks in basketball across the board.
Yep. One area we've got to be really careful of when we talk development is that we're not trying to pigeonhole kids into a certain spot. And that is something I think we've all been guilty of over the years. Like, hey, this player is a great defender but doesn't do anything else. And it's like, well, okay, it's your job to try and make them into something else. Like, don't just sit there and say, but they're a great defender, so we're just going to lean into that. What else can you be doing with them? And it is that short-term versus long-term athlete development we talk about. The end goal is, can I make them the best version of themselves? Whatever that might be. And look, it might take 8 years and they're still just a really good defender and there's not much else to their game. That's fine. But it doesn't mean we don't try and fill the other buckets of skill development along the way too. And look, we see it happen with tall kids all the time. It's, yeah. The early development.
Early tall kids.
Yeah, they end up 2 feet from the rim and that's pretty much their entire world.
Oh, yeah, the big Metro else. Special, huh? Yeah, that's right.
We do have a lot of it. It needs to be completely fair. I've always had that opinion that you're better off being a midget early and grow it around that sort of 16 to 18-year-old age group where you've had that entire exposure as to being a guard, having to play against bigger, stronger, faster people that are physically more dominant that aren't necessarily from a skill set or an IQ perspective, more dominant. So we do have to be a little bit careful as well because our tall kids could go a couple of different ways. They can either be elevated before they're ready and that can cause problems with their development because they never get the opportunity to play. And I am a big believer of if you're going to pick them, play them. Don't just shelve them. That's not fair on anyone. They could be playing in a lower team or they fall so far down the pecking order in terms of teams, they're at an environment that probably isn't going to challenge them enough to improve. So, yes, you have to take some chances on kids and stuff like that, but you've got to look to the long term as well, not just the short term, not just what are they good at now.
I think just going back to your defender-only example, I think you gave me this, Rob, that you can be a great defender.
I'm a little nervous now.
Yeah, me too.
I'm not too short this was.
If everyone could see the look on their face when I go, Rob, I reckon you tell me this, but it's like, I'll just say... I did not tell him that before he even says anything. No. But you said one thing great, two things good in terms of your development. So if you're a great defender, that's fine. You'll be a great defender for I'm not saying to pigeonhole it, but make sure you're elite at it if that's your specialty. But you've got to have two things good. Like what else is it? You're a good shooter, you're a good dribbler, you can bring the ball down the floor, something like that. Like if you're focusing on development, okay, you can't just have one thing, or I just don't believe you can be great at everything. I mean,
think we don't spend enough time on what they're great at.
Yeah.
So because they've already, it's almost like as coaches, we're almost trained to pick the problem areas or fix the weakness, but we don't spend a lot of time on either making the good great elite. Because it's almost like, oh, okay, well, they've got that sorted. Let's fix this other thing, to get them, help them be a bit more rounded, which is good. But spending time on that elite skill, I think, is still, or great skill, depending on the age, is still, I think, really important in development.
Well, and this is part of it as well, I think, is that you can fall into that role player trap. Are they just a really good role player? Well, have they ever been given the opportunity to be anything else? Like, have you ever put the ball in their hands and said, hey, let's just actually see what they can do? Like, there was one summer I had a team prior to Christmas. This is not quite good enough for story time, but, you know, we'll go down this path anyway. Picked the team prior to Christmas, which is normal. Had a backup guard that I thought, yeah, I think they're going to be a good change of pace guard. They'll do some things differently. In my mind, that's what they were. Came back after Christmas. This player had put in a body of work over the break. By the time they got back, it's like, that's not the same kid I picked. Like they have a very different set of skills now that doesn't translate to what I thought they were going to be. It's like, actually, I've got to change their role. Like where I thought they were the backup guard, now it's like, actually, I think they might be the starting guard. Like they have to go into that role. But you've got to be open to that as well. Mm. And we can go in with that fixed mindset of, no, this is what my team is. And, you know, I do tend to be, when I'm coaching teams, a coach that will stick with mostly the same starting five most weeks. If I'm coaching under 12, yeah, I'll probably change a little bit, and it's usually the first five kids to turn up will be the starting five, and we'll make it work from there. But
you see them all getting there at 6 p.m. for their 8:20 game.
You try to coach under 12, sometimes that's necessary.
Yeah, like waiting for Rob at the door as well.
I'm not sure if you've...
For some reason, he was here at 3.
Yeah. Melbourne traffic would dictate sometimes you need that time to get to the games and training sessions. But you've got to open the mind a little bit and just sort of say, hey, look, you know, maybe this is something we've got to be open to. Do you play your bigs at the same time? Like normally, because most teams will go, hey, one big on or the other big on, never both together. Play both at the same time. See what happens. Like, does that force one of them to play a little bit more on the perimeter? Does that now motivate them to go and work on that skill set so that they can play on the perimeter? Do you now have a completely different way to play? But that's the role player side of things that I think we can sometimes fall into.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see super teams, and I put that in air quotes, being developed, and it's like, well, is that helpful? Like, because realistically, is anyone going to get the opportunity to lead, to make others follow them, to experience failure? Like, is that actually a good environment for it to be in? And I would probably suggest no. Like, I would rather see that talent spread out where they have to play against someone that's a different matchup. Like, it's amazing how many times a team with a good big... And look, to be fair, I've been fortunate enough that there have been years where I have had a good big. And it's interesting. You walk in every week and everyone's mentality is, how do we stop that big? It's like, well, great. While you're thinking about that, maybe one of our guards can get off and can do their own thing. And you have to find different ways to do it because all attention is being focused in one direction. And I think that helps player development.
Well, I think also too, a really good point is that if you're going to tell athletes in terms of their roles, what they are, and they want a greater role, and you say, well, you need to do X, Y, and Z to get that greater role, then you've got to help them with it. It can't all be, you know, obviously athletes have to have and we spoke about it last week, a responsibility on themselves to go away and do some work in their own time. But, you know, if you're going to challenge and say, you know, Nick says, I want to play more, I want more minutes, and I say, well, all right, Nick, defensively.
You and everyone else.
Yeah. But defensively, you keep getting blown by. Like, you know, every game blown by, you're hurting us defensively. That needs to improve. Offensively, I need to see you play off 2 feet more, for example. Then when you get to practice, that they have to be points of focus in some of your drills at practice to give him that opportunity to work on it with you there, to get the feedback, to then go away in his own time and work on that in his own time because he's got the points of emphasis from you, yep, from the practice. I think sometimes we get caught saying, well, you need to do this, this, and this, and then we don't set them up in that, in those sort of drills and things for success or to be able to gain those skills.
Yeah, and repetition matters, but deliberate practice is what we're really talking about there. Like, create that environment that is going to work or expose the skill set that needs working on so that they can go and work on it.
I think if you're going back to if you need to have them in roles, because I'm going to try and take the side of the VJBL coach here, right, where there's expectations given to them by the club that they need to achieve a certain level of success in grading or in championship, which right or wrong, that's what the environment that they're living in, right? Like if you are in that and you need to play certain players in a role, you can't just pick one, right? You have to give them two or three. I would say minimum three that they should be able to swing through, right? So, and I'm talking 16s to 18s.
Mm.
Yep.
So I don't think you should pigeonhole a role at all before that, okay? If you are, there's expectations for you to achieve certain results in 16s or 18s, okay? Well, I would give two or three different roles. So I can play them where I need to make sure I get the, I tick the box that they need, but I can also swing them into guard roles, for example, out of the big roles, so they can learn, get a little bit of development as well.
And that is one thing we haven't really spoken about, is the parental and organisational pressure on development in particular, in that parents want their kids developed, which I completely understand. Like, they all want to see their child succeed, but there are also clubs and associations that have expectations on, hey, you need to be in VC, you need to be in the top half of VC, you need to make the classic weekend and those sorts of things. It's very difficult to do that while still developing. You can put all the eggs in one basket and you'll probably achieve one result.
Yeah.
But trying to develop, and ultimately, who cares who wins under 12s? Like, if all those kids leave at the end of it, well, they're not winning 14s. But if the team that gets better in under 12s is the one that is a chance of winning under 14s or under 16s, or not even 14s, maybe under 18s, or transitioning into youth league. Like,
well, you've unpopular got to opinion, who cares who wins under 18s? Like, yeah. It's not that it's not valuable or not a great achievement. It. Of course it is.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
But at the end of the day, if I'm a club, if I'm sitting in a club, I want to be known as the club that gets kids to the next level if they want to.
Yep.
Like, you know, they look at our whatever senior team we've got. I'm not a homegrown only believer. I think you do need to, especially at sort of like that NBL one level. But look how many we've got that actually play, that aren't sitting on the end of the bench, so we can say we've got some juniors, you know, a part of the program.
Well, look at Melbourne and Kilsyth.
Yep.
Great examples in the NBL one at the moment, where you go junior,
yeah.
You know.
And so it's like, you know, then you get to, like, how many of the athletes in our program have, you know, my club or my team, or how many of those have represented Australia at a junior level? How many of those have gone off and got a COE scholarship? How many of those have, you know, that, to me, that should be the level of success, not so much. I think there's a bit of a misguided view of the importance of winning sort of, you know, under 18s or under 16s. Again, I'm not saying don't go for it, and it's, you know, not valuable or a great achievement, but I think the, from a club perspective, looking at, you know, how are you setting up your athletes for beyond, because they are two different things at times, more often than not. Development does, having a development mindset does set you on the path to winning, but often that happens sort of at the back end of your season.
Well, to be honest, you may not even be the coach that gets the benefit of that development. Correct. Early on. How many times have we seen a coach ride in like the shining knight that they are in under 18s and grab the win?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, but think about the poor suckers in 12s, 14s and 16s that had those kids that put a mountain of work into them so that they can be at that point.
I appreciate you both not looking at me when you were thinking. And let's not forget the coach.
But that's the
but
thing.
It's true. But it's also, do you have the patience to wait for that as well?
Yep.
Because, you know, I look at the under 12 team that you coached, that were the full, I think they were full bottom age, or close to at Diamond Valley, and you lost a lot of games early, but then in the back end of the year, you went on like a 10 game or 9 game winning streak because of that development. But it's, do clubs and parents and athletes have the patience to get to that? Those ones did, which was fantastic. But we often see, and, you know, we often hear from coaches saying, oh, I'm getting all this pressure to win, but if I do that, then that's going to hurt our development, etc.
And look, don't get me wrong, very privileged position I was in then as well, in that as a coach I probably had enough credibility that I could walk in there and say, hey, this is the path we're going down, and all the parents are like, hey, pip pip cheerio, we're on. Like, we're on board with this, and there wasn't that constant questioning at me. If you are a younger coach or a coach with less experience, you probably will get questioned in that, and that's where I think it's an important piece in this, is to communicate with the parents what this is actually going to be about. Are you about winning? Are you about developing? And that's not to say that the two can't cross over, but ultimately I put on the very early doors, hey, this is about development. My job is to get them better in the hope that they all come back next season in a better position than when we've started this one. And I remember there was one kid that quit at the end of that season I was spewing on because he was the kid that I thought that might be the long-term one that I think might be all right. And he's like, oh, look, he still wants to play. He still plays domestic. We don't want to do the travel on a Friday night and he wants to give footy a crack. It's like, well, that sucks. But all right, cool, go do it. Like, at least it wasn't I've destroyed the kid's love of the sport or anything like
we
that.
Hate you.
Yeah, there are other reasons. I still see him at the shops every now and again. He's a freaking giant. I'm like, damn it, he was the one. He could have been all right. But it is that sort of thing where you have to be very clear, I think, with the parents at the start. But if you're going to go in and say, hey, I'm thinking development with this team and this is what we're going down, and then you don't uphold this, you can't be shocked when there's pushback.
Yeah.
So...
But there's also the conversation with your high performance manager or DOC about exactly what you're expected to achieve with your team and see if that's right for you as well. Yep. Hey, look, we just want you to win. Okay, cool. Well, very good team. Probably should get better because there's probably, you know, maybe they'll make a state team. Maybe they'll make a world's team. Maybe they'll play in the NBL or WNBL. Okay, so understand... exactly where you stand with the club as well is also important.
Yeah, and it's, look, every club will be different, whether that be representative basketball, domestic basketball, anywhere and anything in between, everything will be a little bit different. But it doesn't hurt to have a little bit of a chat with someone else within your program that might be coaching higher. So if you are coaching an under-12s team, go and chat to the under-16s coach and say, well, look, what are the things that you experienced at under-16s that you feel like had this been taught in under-12s would be making a difference right now? And you can get a really clear understanding. Because one of the things we see all the time is obviously pressing in under-12s. Like, we see that a lot, and consequently turnovers are high and those sorts of things. But you don't tend to see heaps of it under-16s and under-18s. So, okay, well, what's the turning point there? Well, better ball handlers, better vision, they don't get stressed by pressure, those sorts of things. Well, okay, can I create that environment in under-12 so that they have that learning earlier than when they would normally get it in under-16s when they kind of work it out a little bit more or have the strength. And look, there's some constraints you can't change, physical strength being one of them. Mm. That's going to happen. But, you know, have a little bit of a chat with someone else, I think, within the program can actually really help that as well. So, all right, that wraps us up on the development chat. We're into social split talk.
Something to post on Facebook. Let's go.
It's like me on Twitter.
So this is an excerpt from the Pure Athlete podcast, which I would go on and recommend having a little bit of a listen to. And they've got tons of great information on there. So this is from Jamal Crawford. So there's two clips within this. It just goes for the whole 2 minutes just so you get some clarity on this one. You'll be able to pick when the split happens.
Yeah, you know what? I remember when I was first like dribbling the ball and I was trying to go through my legs, I had to lift up my leg to make sure the ball cleared. And it was just, I always had a ball with me. Like, I would sleep with my basketball. I took it everywhere. In Seattle, it rains a lot. I used to go to courts, and I would look around, and I'm like, okay, there's nobody out here. And I was like, yes, I'm getting better. Because, you know, I was always the kid that I didn't want to make excuses. Like, I love the game so much. I would dribble in the rain, and I had to learn how to navigate the ball when it's wet. I had to learn how to navigate the ball when the concrete was slanted, or, you know, you're playing on double rims. I had to figure all this stuff out. And I spent a lot of time by myself. So I would watch my favorite players, Isaiah Thomas, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Pistol Pete. I watched all these people and I would see the blueprint of what they were doing. And I spent so much time by myself, I tried to be creative and use my imagination. I feel like there's so many trainers that are teaching kids stuff that they'll never use in games. And that's coming from me, right? Who was one of the best ball handlers. But I still knew when to use it, when not to. Most of my, if you go back and look, most of my, like, I guess you can say fancy dribbling came when a pick and roll was coming to shift a defender to get him to move so I could have an angle to the lane or angle to make a play. I think, I don't know if we can, but we need to. I'm teaching my son that. So I think some of that's lost. And for me, it's just important to always spew that out there. On my last post, I had Popovich, actually, Coach Pop, the great Coach Pop. And he was yelling to his team, they're playing us, ironically, and he's telling them, swing it, swing the ball. And I'm trying to tell kids that it's so much better to play a good brand of basketball, because if you could do that, you can play forever. You can play with anybody. That's universal. You can go overseas and play. You can play in the States. People want to play with people that are good team players, and I think that's what's being lost when some of these kids are getting trained, because they're so individualized. It's so just about them.
So Jamal Crawford, obviously an NBA veteran for a number of years, played at multiple teams and all those sorts of things. is now in the space where his son's obviously coming through, and he's seeing the whole AAU and trainers and those sorts of things coming for him. And it's interesting to get his take on something like that that probably has seen behind the curtain as to what does success actually look like at the next level, what do you need to have to play in the next level and those types of things. And he's had a couple of posts of late where talking about individual skills trainers that is like, hey, they just teach moves. And they don't need moves, they need reads as to what can they do, how should they do it. And even more interesting was him talking about, you know, his fancy stuff, and I'll say that in inverted commas, was about coming off on balls and how to set up to come off an on ball. And it's like, yeah, he doesn't, it's not wasted movement, it's movement with purpose. And even going back to the start of just, he loved the game. And because he loved the game, he would go and dribble in the wet. He would go and dribble on uneven concrete. He would go and shoot on double rims, which is like the worst thing in the world that our kids complain about, or like a net that's broken a little bit. But that was what he wanted to do. So if we can teach our kids to love the game, they'll find their own level of motivation within that to go and find whatever they want to find from there.
It's just interesting. A player like that is saying those things, right? He's one who could almost argue the other way, right? But he's saying, this is, you know, this is what I've seen. This is what works and what doesn't work. It's really interesting.
It is. And it's, you know, it's difficult. I get it. It's, you know, everyone gets enamored by it. And look, you could jump on YouTube now and see like Jamal Crawford, like 15 best crossovers will be the first video that climbs up on there, I would suggest. Of course, you're going to sit there and go, oh, but all the flashy stuff. And it's like, yeah, but he also won. Like there was a reason that everyone, like he was sixth man of the year. I can't even think how many times now. It was almost named after him at one stage. But it's amazing that someone at that level can sit there and sort of see through the fluff, I suppose, for lack of a better term. It's like, hey, actually, what matters and what's going to get people better? How do they get people better? But it links back into, if you love it, you'll find a way to get better in that space as well. So that's from the Pure Athlete Pod. So I would recommend, if go and have a listen to the whole thing. I think it's about 40 minutes, but he speaks really well. So anytime Jamal Crawford posts on anything player development, always have a listen to it. It's a really good one. Thank you both for jumping in today. That's very much appreciated. Coaches, thanks very much for listening once again, and we will catch everyone on the pod next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform, and don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.